you people. It is Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeBlancis off for another day of broadcast insolence. All right, listen, kids.
Yeah.
We have the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlancis. Mighty art players have been working very hard, very diligently in the last hour.
Very.
To bring you a piece of art that is, well, kind of just sums up where we are, at least in Washington, D.C. Let me tell you before we do that what's coming up. Ben Bradley's going to join us in just a few minutes. Dan Biss performed on stage last night with Pussy Riot.
Mm-hmm. He did.
Did he have a cowbell or?
I think in Russia that's actually an insult of some sort.
That's the Russian band that went to jail because they were critical of Putin.
Right. Exactly.
Very, the feminist group.
And apparently Putin's at it again because that former KGB spy who was poisoned poisoned with polonium.
What a crazy story.
Which is the substance so it's the weapon of choice that Putin has used to poison his enemies.
And not publicly available, last I checked. It's not exactly gettable by everybody.
It's just in Putin's office. He's got it.
Yeah. Oh, there's one vial missing. I forgot to mention that.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that. And also, Ambassador Bruce Hayman's going to be with us. He was the ambassador to Canada from the United States. And he has his own thoughts about the tariffs and and what's happening in the State Department and mm-hmm. what's happening in the world here. And it appears that Canada might get carved out now. I think it's because of Bruce. And it could be Bruce and
good
also
job, Bruce.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll figure that out. We'll talk about that in just a few minutes with him. But first, I want to play this for you because mm-hmm. you know, they say there's no chaos, right? In the White House.
Nope.
Everything is just fine. There is nothing to see here.
Very positive.
Sarah Sanders said this is an historic presidency. It is in many ways, but it is also historic in the number of people who've left the administration in the first year and month.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Year and 6 weeks, essentially, is what it has been. And so we did a little tribute.
This is an intense place, as every White House. It's not abnormal that you would have people come and go.
But actually, it is actually abnormal. No administration in recent history has had this much turnover.
But it's not abnormal to have turnover.
Trump's in the White House. All the staffers have come back. No Sally Yates. She's gone. He made her pack her bags. Mike Flynn might go to jail. He better not drop the soap. Angie Reed was shown the door, but why nobody knows. James Comey's Russian case, the White House can't have that. He wasn't loyal, so Trump stabbed him in the back. Mike the Bee didn't last, Walter Shaw kicked out the door. Sean Spicer did his best, but the president wanted more. Now Omarosa's gone, now why they go do that? Know what you're thinking, and it's not because she's black. Steve Bannon lost his mind, and Gorka walked away. Tom Price and Dina Powell had nothing left to say. It's only been a year, he's sending staffers back. Mike Short, Rince, Priebus, Scaramucci, y'all come back. Rob Porter had to go, Raphael has disappeared. Hope Hicks and Gary Cohn, who else the end is near?
And I read, well, gee, maybe people don't want to work for Trump, and believe me, everybody wants to work in the White House. So many people want to come in. I have a choice of anybody. I could take any position in the White House, and they love this White House because we have energy like rarely before.
I want to point out that I've just been reading this complaint by Stormy Daniels, and it does appear that he is willing to take any position in the White House. Oh, golly. Was it too soon?
There.
Yeah, it was too much.
Should we call him President Dennison on a second reference now? Donald Trump, a.k.a. David Dennison.
All right. I got to tell you how unbelievably hurtful this is to me.
What?
That his gnome de Cheatin is the same name as the college I attended.
Yeah. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. I was like, Denison, oh, no. No.
That's where it all started.
No. Well, then I was thinking, I wonder if any of his kids. I'm trying to figure out, like, who went there?
Maybe there was some connection.
In his administration.
The only connection I heard so far, not to Denison, was just DD would be defendant and PP is plaintiff. And so they came up with names that were alliterative along those lines. But they chose Denison. Oh, and I would be offended about that.
It's spelled differently.
Go but, Big Red.
Yeah, Go Big Red. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Did you have to go look that up while I was...
No, I think we've brought it up before. I was double checking, though.
Yeah, Kevin.
Go Big Red. Yeah. I figured out what they are, DD and PP. I think I already worked it out.
Yeah, it's probably more likely that. I would say, you're probably... Yeah.
Yeah.
You figured that out.
It's kind of like the nicknames for Warren G. Harding's love notes.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of is. Yeah. Like Jerry. Like DD is Jerry. Yeah.
Maybe he's just a big boy.
I got to tell you something. It would have been much funnier if it were Dick Denison. I'll tell you that right now.
They could have gotten a little more creative.
Yeah.
Go Big Red.
They could have gotten more creative. Mm-hmm. Do you see the president's really a creative guy? Because I don't see it.
The lawyers are certainly creative to loop this one together like they did.
Yeah. They always talk about how funny Trump is. Trump is only funny because he's mean, you know? He's one of those mean, funny guys.
Yeah.
Because it's like, did he just say that? Oh, it makes me uncomfortable. I think I'm going to laugh.
And he gets charity laughs from his people.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, because they know. Right. Because they know that they're next, you know, if it doesn't work out.
Right. Another one bites the dust.
Yeah.
I had forgotten about some of the names in that song. Tom Price, a couple of them. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Right. It's like the obit reel at the Oscars. Oh, yeah, they died.
Oh, yeah, that did happen this year.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. That was sad.
A couple of those guys went down in some pretty interesting flames, Tom Price being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but that always happens. Every White House, now I will say this, every White House always has, you know, about, let's see. The Trump administration has had twice as many as the Bush administration had in the first year.
In terms of people who have left?
Right. And has had three times as many as the Obama administration had in the first year.
Hmm.
Now, a first year is always a shakeout year. People tend to stay a little bit longer. It's sort of like freshman year of college. You know, there's some people that, they go home.
Cut out for it, like Scaramucci, for instance.
Right. They go home for Thanksgiving and they just never come back, right? I mean, you know that. Oh, I got a single. That's the kind of thing that happens in college. Now, here is the key, though. George Bush, his first year in office, we went to war, right? We got attacked and went to war. Now, that's going to clear some people out. You need to put a war cabinet in, essentially, in a moment like that in history.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in a peaceful time when things are going well in the economy and in the country, except for the fact that there's race riots and Nazis are tiki torching their way through southern states, and everybody's like, hey, no, that's fine. President's like, good guys, love them. Do they vote? And if they do, I know they vote for me, so I get that. Come on. You don't need to have this kind of turnover. It is, but they said it yesterday. We get it. He likes conflict. I like to watch it. I got really creeped when he said that.
Mm-hmm.
I like to watch conflict. It's like, oh, no. Really? What else do you like to watch?
Well,
oh, that's on page 32 of this complaint. I have it right here.
Yeah,
hold
there
on.
Is some supporting evidence and a lot of salacious detail here. She came forward because of the Access Hollywood videotapes were released, and that initially, you know, compelled her to say, hey, me too, so to speak. And then that's when she was contacted by his personal lawyer, Mr. Cohn.
I got to say that this is a whole gigantic bowl of nothing at the end of the day, though. It's fun, but it doesn't count anymore. I mean, remember, there was an entire impeachment of a president surrounding these issues in the 1990s. This was the kind of thing that actually cut off the political careers of John Edwards and Gary Hart, and you know, there's a bunch of people who, you know, got honeypotted out of their political life.
Seem to no longer qualify, but I think times have changed and people are willing to accept mistresses and affairs. I think there are certain lines that can't be crossed. Maybe porn star used to be one of them, not anymore.
I mean, the Democrats don't really have a leg to stand on here because of their defense of Bill Clinton during the Monica Lewinsky situation. Right. It was an intern, which I think is
I thought that part
unforgivable.
Crossed a line. If you're subordinate within the White House with the affair actually taking place in the White House, I thought those were certain lines that you didn't
for
expect.
Sure. But I ask you this question. Where are the religious Republicans who were so offended by all of that?
Don't seem to care.
Where were I mean, we've just given up on that whole thing, right? So now the religious right can never again criticize somebody for having an affair.
I think.
Or criticize somebody for laying with porn stars.
I don't think it seems to
or
matter.
Or paying them off.
Yeah. I mean, that's okay now? Because believe me, it's going to happen again. I don't think Bernie Sanders is going to do it, but someone's going to do it. Oh, that would be disgusting, wouldn't it? By the way, Stormy and I truly would like to announce that I am leaving now my wife of many years and my accountant, Jane.
What was his, what would his alter ego name be?
Yeah, what would Bernie be?
What would Bernie go with? It'd be something outrageous.
BB? Would he have to be a BB?
No, that would be too obvious. Yeah, I think it would be...
Feel the burn?
Max Bialystock. Let me spell that for you. B-I-A. All right. Here we go. Judy, tell us what's coming up at the bottom of the hour.
Be sure to check out the CB app or hit up Facebook. Tell Chicago's Best TV where you like to eat. Watch Chicago's Best Sundays at 10 p.m. on WGN-TV. Your pick just might be Chicago's Best.
We have to play some Stray Cats here because we couldn't find any Pussy Riot.
You don't have that, like, on your in your music library?
Nope. I always have had trouble finding it. All right, Ben Bradley is here. Daniel Biss, the guy who wants to be governor of the state of Illinois, was on stage last night with Pussy Riot. First of all, don't they sing in Russian, Pussy
Riot? Yeah, it's kind of hard to decipher.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't sing mercifully, nor play the air guitar with them.
Oh, good.
He actually just gave a little speech beforehand, and according to some reporters who were there, while he was making the speech, at least one guy in the audience shouted, "Boring!"
Oh, he is kind of boring, but I think that's what he...
That's part of his charm.
Yeah,
just doesn't seem like he'd be at that concert.
It does look like he's getting yelled at by his wife in that commercial when he's like looking at whatever it is, the bill, the grades, whatever it is. And he's like, okay, honey, no, it's okay.
It doesn't look comfy.
I don't, yeah.
It's not a comfy conversation. It's a good thing they didn't have audio on that.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on there.
Interesting, though. Yeah, this group from Russia, they're jailed. You may remember a couple of years back, they were jailed for, let's see, what was the official term?
They criticized Putin or something.
Yeah,
he certainly took offense.
There was the actual charge. Hooliganism motivated by religious hatred is what they were jailed for in Russia.
Oh.
Because they went and performed uninvited at a big cathedral in Moscow because the church leaders were supporting Vladimir Putin.
For those of us still lost, though, Ben, can you explain the connection between Pussy Riot and Daniel Biss?
Well, Pussy Riot is very anti, obviously, Putin. They're anti Donald Trump. They are have gone all over the U.S. and other parts of the world supporting people who they determine to be progressive candidates. And apparently Daniel Biss falls into that category.
That's kind of ironic about Trump, because that's exactly what he made the Beverly Hills Hotel.
Okay.
All right. So let's talk about. Did you see what I did there?
I saw it.
We did. Oh, whoa.
No part of it. No,
don't shoot yourself over it. It wasn't that bad.
Yeah, I just shot my toe off. All right. Can I just ask you this, though?
Yeah.
Does this help the Daniel Biss in any way, shape, or form?
Well, I think he's, you know, anytime you can reach out to a new demographic, if you will.
A younger demographic. You think he's trying to get some traction with the Bernie Sanders people.
Yeah, no, this isn't quite, Billy Joel performing for you or Bruce Springsteen performing for you. But, you know, it taps into a different demographic. And in a very crowded Democratic primary, maybe it picks up a couple of votes. And, this is the Bernie Sanders crowd that he's been trying to go after. Think about how he's painted himself as the only middle class candidate in a race that's filled with millionaires and billionaires.
And it seems as if the latest polls show that Kennedy's tightening up that race a little bit, coming from behind where he's been.
Boy, so hard to see what these polls may turn out because, yeah, you're right, the polls have tightened up a little bit, but there's still that huge number of undecided. And this is a primary vote, so not everybody who talks to pollsters is actually going to go out and cast a ballot.
That's true, but they say that any of the candidates match up pretty nicely against Rauner at this point in the race, knowing there's still a lot of time before that election.
Well, there was one point in the race where anybody against Rauner, I think it was like an unidentified Democrat against Rauner, was doing well.
It's interesting.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of concert news, I heard your conversation just a couple of minutes ago, about politicians who have previously been harmed by lesser sex scandals.
Yes.
And, you know, kind of look what their careers could have been but for.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me back to another concert I attended within the last 6 months or so in Rosemont. It was Pete Townsend's Quadrophenia. It was a fundraiser for Teen Cancer America.
Right.
And there we are in a little kind of, I don't know, quasi-VIP room next, you know, right off the concert stage. And I look over and I say to my wife, oh my gosh, I think that's John Edwards.
Get out.
So this is like some side room. It was certainly not VIP.
In Rosemont,
there's like, you know, I don't know, 50 people there. Roe probably knew half of them, to tell you, you know, the crowd that was there.
I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. Why would you accuse me of something
like
that?
Bring him up.
Why would you bring me up in a
Rosemont?
Like this?
And I look over and I say to Molly, I say, that guy could have been president of the United States, and instead, he's at this concert in Rosemont, off to the side, drinking a beer at a table, with just like one other person. He wasn't surrounded by people. So, Ro, you know my wife.
Mm-hmm.
She goes over and sits on his lap.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, I could totally see this.
For reaction, she does it.
These two are like Fun with Dick and Jane, these two.
Oh, God.
It's like, it's unbelievable when you're out with them.
Oh,
they are.
She gives him the full, hey, aren't you John Edwards?
Yeah.
My wife, by the way, would have had no idea who he was if I hadn't told her. And he brightens up and is engaged, and there's this whole kind of, you know.
I sure am. I remember the good old days when people would remember me and sit on my lap.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then we're kind of watching this play out. And about 3 minutes in, I see Molly kind of point back to me and the group I'm standing with, and Edward's face goes pale. Not because he knows who I am, but because he apparently, I find out later, he said, oh, who are you here with? And she said, oh, my husband. He's a reporter.
Oh, great.
Oh, God.
Wrong thing to say.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, and the other way, he had the other issue, too, because he had the dying wife.
Yeah, that
he
makes
had the
it,
dying
he
wife.
So what is worse? On the moral scale of outrage, is it an affair with a porn star shortly after your wife has a child, or having an affair while your wife has
having
cancer?
Having a baby with the videographer on your campaign trail while your wife has cancer.
So is that the
worst
one?
Well, for the outside world, for the wife, it's worse because the wife lived to know that you just were having sex after she had the baby, and that's what was going on there with the Trump thing with Melania. Although, I got to tell you, that's a two-way street right there with Melania. And I mean, after the baby was born, I have air now, don't worry. You step, separate bedroom, good idea. You know that was, don't touch me. Don't touch me. So I don't know.
I'm not
sure
which one, though, to answer the question.
And then,
well, I mean, morally,
can you believe we're even
morally,
discussing
it's obviously John Edwards. Morally, it is. But it is. But that's, but yes, but we are discussing this. Yes.
Yes, so that's happening.
But the fact is that the porn star, though, that's kind of an interesting piece in this because, you know, you do that's a new level. You know, you got a whole new level here of a president with porn star where you're like, this is like Italy now. This is the kind of thing that would happen in Italy.
I walked by the TV a minute ago, and the graphic over Sarah Sanders' news conference on CNN said, White House press conference as porn star sues president. And I just thought, oh, my gosh.
Is this The Onion? Is this real?
Yeah.
It kind of takes a second to absorb it, right?
Well, you know, people love to shout fake news. We couldn't make this stuff up.
Better than pack your bags, we're moving back to Slovenia.
He's never lived in Slovenia.
It doesn't matter. I don't. Does that, I don't think it matters now, does it? I don't think it's too late.
Yeah. Well, maybe all they. Right. Maybe they will. Is it, just get in the car and leave.
Boom! 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 All right. Thank you very much, Ben. Appreciate it. We'll see you tonight.
Hey, coming up at 5 o'clock, our political reporter Tamon Bradley has a good profile in the race for Cook County Assessor.
Ooh. Oh, so that's a big, that's a hot race.
On that. Yeah, it's
there's a ton of hot races 2 weeks away now.
And Tamon talks to assessor Joe Berrios, who has not been inclined to do many interviews as of late.
Yeah, because he's got real competition here for the first time ever.
It's a lot of questions to answer, too.
Yep. We'll get into it at 5.
Like, what does this mean? I mean, I got questions for him, too. What is this? When you multiply times this number, what is this number?
Why does that only count for the wealthy people, and then there's a different number?
What is
in
that?
In the poorer neighborhoods.
All right. We will we'll find out all the answers to that. But first, Judy's got news coming your way in 2. Brocon Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. We're very, very pleased and proud to have Ambassador Bruce Hayman in the studio with us.
Yes.
He was the ambassador from the United States to Canada.
We like Canada.
I love Canada. Mm-hmm. I know Bruce loves Canada.
Mm-hmm. Everybody.
Everybody
Canadians
loves Canada.
Canadians are so lovable, right?
Canada is the greatest neighbor, ally, partner, supporter. Mm-hmm. It's the largest non-fenced border in the world, at least now. I mean, I could see where they're going to be. Once we're done with Mexico, we're going to try to fence off Canada. They should be fencing from us right now is what should be happening.
They were a great trade partner.
Yes. And the president says he wants to throw tariffs on steel. And it turns out that Canada, not China, not Russia, not Germany, Canada is the number one exporter of their steel product to the United States of America. Now, what in the hell is going on here? What are you hearing from up in Ottawa and the rest of the country about this?
I think they were stunned. But the reality is, if you go back and you look at what happened last week, I think they weren't the only ones stunned. I think the president just was winging it. Oh, that's a diplomatic term. I think he literally just sat there, and I think he stunned his staff. He stunned the whole of U.S. government. He didn't consult Congress. And he obviously didn't discuss this with his allies. And all of a sudden he sits down and goes, yep, we're having a tariff.
Well, there were some conversations with Gary Cohen, because it is being said now that Gary was trying to talk him out of it.
Right.
His chief economic advisor.
Right.
Was trying to talk him out of it, and then couldn't. And Gary Cohen resigns. Right after the president said, people love working here. He's enduring some criticism here because, and I know you formerly in your former life before you were an ambassador, you worked at Goldman Sachs and you are familiar with Gary Cohen. And Gary Cohen had endured some criticism for being very public about his disdain for the president's treatment of the situation in Charlottesville, Virginia, and with the Nazis and all of that, and Gary took that very personally, but stayed, and then it took this to leave. So there, he's enduring some criticism in the press. Right, I happen to think it's unfair because you need adults in this room. If everybody who got offended or everybody who was afraid to be there left, we'd be in a really serious problem here with a president who clearly is winging it and not always with the best of intentions.
Well, Gary Cohn's a pro-business guy, too, in a protectionist kind of world there in the Trump world. And so there was probably good and healthy to have that pushback. So him leaving, I think, is partially what rattles Wall Street and gets some of our allies stirred up and concerned.
So there's news today that possibly Canada and Mexico will be carved out. This, of course, is pending Jared Kushner's success down in Mexico as he's negotiating NAFTA without a security clearance down there.
Is he there now?
Yes, he is. With Peña Nieto. And there's a whole, I want to talk to you about that, too, because you're obviously very familiar with the situation, the triad here of these three countries. But do you think that Canada will be pulled out of this, and should they be?
Well, first of all, they definitely should be. I mean, you described it early on, and I think most Americans know this. It's our best friend. It's more than just a neighbor. They're family. You know, we do more trading with Canada than anyone else in the world on a balanced basis. And we've been talking about trade deficits. While China is our number one trading, partner is a stretch in terms because we have a huge deficit with them. But with Canada right now, we run a surplus in goods and services. The U.S. has a surplus. So you can't be mad at Canada on that.
You can't be mad at Canada for anything. Every single war the United States has been involved in, save a battle in the War of 1812, every single war, including the Revolutionary War, Canada has helped here, right?
Canada's been in the trenches with us in Afghanistan. Canada, by the way, I got to know Ambassador Taylor before he passed away. He was the ambassador of Canada who took out those American diplomats in Iran that made the movie Argo. Mm-hmm. I was up in Gander with the people in Gander where all the flights were diverted on 9/11, which is now a Broadway show. The relationship we have is something made in Hollywood or Broadway or novels. It is that good. And when the president decides to start poking at Canada, you have to ask yourself, who is he not poking at? I mean, literally, what friends are we going to have around the world? And the risk, people sit down and say, well, what can Canada do in a trade war? Well, first of all, you don't want to go to war.
No.
Right. The word war is a bad term to begin with. But, you know, Canada's been there at every turn. And so, you know, why jeopardize that friendship and relationship? I think there's...
Do you have to do Canada and Mexico together in a situation like this, do you think?
So I'm a believer in NAFTA, and I'll tell you why. I think the early days of NAFTA, we did lose factories. And I think that that was a early mistake that we didn't protect a number of factories very early on. They did go to low labor markets. Mm-hmm. But what's happening now is the majority of factories, and the president tweeted out about losing factories. We're losing factories because of automation. Computers, robotics, technology. And that's not why factories aren't closing because they're going off all around the world the way they did in those early days. NAFTA needs to be updated. It needs to be modernized.
Yeah,
but I think the power of North America is beyond just trade. It's the global influence that we'll have around the world. And I think that there's this collection of countries in Europe, in Asia, and now we have North America. By breaking this up, I think it reduces our influence more broadly, even outside of North America.
You heard the president say, let's move forward with the NAFTA negotiations. Prime Minister Trudeau said, yes, we're moving forward. And he was asked about the tariffs, and he seemed to slough it off and say, hey, well, let's wait to see exactly what the president really does. Doesn't seem worried about it. It feels as if it is moving in that direction now, despite what we heard last week.
I think it was measured. And I think the Canadians are very measured relative to other parts of the world. We saw the European Union come out and immediately say, we're going to tax your Harleys. We're going to tax your bourbon. We're going to do all this. The Canadians were very careful in their language and style, trying to de-escalate this as best possible. But make no mistake about it, a tariff put on Canada would hurt Canadian jobs and would hurt the U.S. Do you know a carburetor, when you make a carburetor, crosses the U.S.-Canada border like 8 or 9 times? Try to figure out which is the Canadian part, which is the U.S. part.
Right.
We make things together. And the automobile industry is the largest where we make things cross-border.
Let's talk about Gary Cohen here.
Yeah.
We don't know who the new economic advisor is going to be to the president. There's a lot of different names being bandied about. Kudlow seems to be the one that everybody's talking about, I think, in media because he's a media guy, Larry Kudlow. But how big of a loss is it to the United States that Gary Cohen, a steady hand, is leaving this unsteady White House?
It's a big loss, but the biggest time you will notice, and I hope we don't face it, is when you get into a financial crisis, which we have experienced. Thank God we haven't had it since the 2008-2009 financial crisis that we had. But it was during that time that there had to be incredible intervention to stabilize the economy. And Gary was at that table. And he was in that room. And so given the knowledge that he had based on previous experiences and his not being available now to go in there and do that, that if we faced a financial crisis, who is it in the U.S. government today that you're going to call and send in there to start negotiating with, you know, Diamond and Blankfein and all the others to try
guys,
and the Fed and bring it together? Remember, we have a brand new Fed chair who is not yet tested and seasoned. And so I'm not predicting any bad things coming up. In fact, I hope we don't see one ever. But if we do, you want adults in the room who can actually get things done and stabilize things. That's what Gary provided.
People don't remember what that was like. That's September of 2008. You had an election looming. You had the world coming to an end, and the governor of the Fed in New York had this meeting with all these guys sitting around deciding whether or not they were going to bail out. They were asking the government to bail out. You know, as you mentioned, all these guys, all the stakeholders, the guys from Goldman Sachs and AIG and everybody else, and they were like, "What are you going to do?" And the Chrysler and Ford and Chevy were in this. Like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? What are we going to do? You got to, are we going to save us? Are we going to let us go? And they had to figure out a way to do it, and they did it. And there were a lot of people that I think today are now around the White House who would have said, "Nah, let it go." And then you have not only just a global crisis,
you have a
depression in America.
Right.
And that's the sort of thing that scares me, especially as they're loosening up some of these other rules. All right. Well, it's never enough time. But thank you very much, Ambassador. Thank you for being here.
Thanks,
always
Ambassador.
Always good to be here. And always love Canada. And yes, keep that
very
in
important.
Mind.
Oh, Canada. Right. Except for hockey. We love Canada. Exactly. I mean, we love the players.
Like their players
they're on
come
our
here.
Teams. Yeah,
those that's ones it. Are good.
Right. We don't like their teams. All right. No. Here we go. Judy, tell us what's coming up at the top of the hour news. Tom Skilling is with us, as he is every afternoon.
Guys, how are you? We've only missed a day, and I feel like it's been a week since I talked to you.
Oh, that's sweet, Tom.
Well, it's nice to hear your voices again and have you back and be able to talk.
We miss you too, Tom.
Well, thank you, and happy Wednesday, guys.
Mm-hmm. Tom?
Yes.
I would like to...
Complain?
No. Oh. I would like to play a little song for you, Tom.
Oh, all right.
All right.
Helping Santa Claus this year on Christmas Eve. I was quite amazed and my pals all gazed when Santa came to me. I wondered what his reason was for asking me this year. There are so many trees, won't you help me please? And I answered with this cheer. Oh yes, Santa, I'll help you make the rounds.
Oh, God.
Because I love the boys and girls and I know the town. So I'm helping.
All right. Okay. Is that who I think it is?
That is.
Bring back memories for you, Tom.
Albert, is that Mr. Alley Cat?
Albert the Alley Cat. Yeah, that was your Alley sidekick.
Yeah.
At WITI in
Milwaukee.
Milwaukee.
Now, that was. See, that predated me, that little jingle. I had never heard that before. Mm-hmm. He was teamed with Ward Allen for many years, who did the weather up there. And then they brought me in. So. But isn't that something? Yeah.
So we found that, when we were talking about this a couple of days ago, apparently there's quite a following of this radio station up in Wisconsin.
Yes.
And we had some people who, hold on to things like this.
Right. They remembered Alvin.
Right.
And remembered you from up there. Remembered Albert the Alley Cat. And they sent us these things. Now, here's this is a little interaction that we have with you and the Alley Cat.
Oh, great.
Well, I know summer's here, Al, because you have your fishing hat on.
Too humid.
Too humid.
Too humid. Do something about it immediately.
Now I'm listening to that character. And again, this is a sock puppet or something, right? Is
yes.
It a puppet?
That it was done by a fellow by the name of Jack Dublon for many, many years up there.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. Now, so there you are. So you're trying to do a serious weather forecast,
right.
And they got this stupid sock puppet, working with you.
Yeah.
Now, I was listening to this guy's voice, and I'm like, what does that sound like? What does that sound like? And then I realized that's Jimmy from the Zipa commercials all over radio.
You know what? That's right.
Yeah.
I've heard those commercials. I hadn't thought about that, but you are absolutely right. There's a great similarity there.
I still can't get over the fact that you are a respected, dignified scientist.
Oh.
Has to be on air with a puppet.
Hold on. I want to do the Jimmy Zipa thing here. Hold on. This is Jimmy.
Mm-hmm. Hey, listen up. It's Jimmy over here. I got a little, a public service announcement.
Okay, stop right there. All right. And then you got Albert the Alley Cat. Which is, essentially the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know summer's here, Al, because you have your fishing hat on.
Too Hume.
Right?
It does. It is. It is stunning how similar those are. I hadn't put two and two. Leave it to Rokon to come up with this.
There is. It's crazy.
I know. It was like a... I always thought it interesting that it worked the way it did in Milwaukee. Do you know that Albert was the most widely recognized on-air personality in the market up there in Milwaukee? And it was interesting because here I am, a young 24, 25-year-old kid standing next to the most recognized on-air personality in Milwaukee. It was
an honor for you?
It was quite a boost. And although the American Meteorological Society let me know in no uncertain terms that either the puppet went or my seal of approval went, and Warner Bum, who was the University of Wisconsin chancellor at the time there, and he was also president of the American Meteorological Society, went to bat for me because he understood the situation I was in. They had told me when they hired me that the puppet was going back to the kids' show, but he was so popular. They ran an article, I think it was Section 4, page 8 of the Milwaukee Journal, and the bags of mail that Albert was being sent back to the kids' show.
Oh, God.
Oh, gee.
The bags of mail, I mean, literally, these were... They were piled in the news director's office to the ceiling.
Well, you know how we sit around like Clooney makes a movie every couple of years about the good old days of television.
Yeah,
Murrow and all of that.
Yeah.
Well, this was really the good old days of local television. Was an esteemed meteorologist, probably one of the most respected, dignified perpetrators, I'm using that term, of the trade of meteorology, is Tom Skilling. And at one point, he had to work with a sock puppet. In the good old days of television, what it was like.
And I think what's interesting there is it seemed like, and I want to get your opinion on this, Tom, but it seemed like at that time, weather was more seen as an entertainment thing and not a science thing.
You know, this was back in the gimmicky era. We didn't have satellites. We didn't have radar, Doppler radar. You didn't have anything like that. So some program director back in the earlier mid-60s up there said, hey, why don't we take Albert from the kids show and put him on the weather? And so they teamed him up with Ward Allen, and it worked. But then they called me when I was working in Jacksonville and said, say, we saw you on a tape. We were looking at a news anchor, and we want to go with a more serious approach to weather, and Albert's going back to the kids show again, but would you work with him for a bit? And I had heard about this puppet when I was going to school.
Because you were in Madison.
Madison, yeah. Kids who grew up in Madison said, what you need on your weather show when I was doing the weather over there is a puppet. Oh. And I said, you have got to be I don't need that on my... So I recalled that to them when they were hiring me. I said, I can't believe I'm doing this, but I wanted desperately to get back to the Midwest. And it was a great station, WITI. It's now one of the Tribune Group.
Mm-hmm.
It was a fascinating experience, and I'm glad it's behind us now. So, because you're right, the idea that somebody who took the weather very, very seriously was sitting next to a puppet is kind of odd.
It feels like it would seem odd too, like uncomfortable.
Yeah, and when you're young,
what happened when there was like a snowstorm or a tornado, tornadic activity in the area? Did the puppet gets go away for a while?
I don't remember how we handled that. No, the puppet was there. He was, when they designed a news set up there, there was always an accommodation made for Albert the Alley Cat.
Oh, God.
They put a little thing there, and it was interesting because Jack DuBlanc would go into this little hole on the set and then would put his hand up with Albert. And I couldn't always hear what he was saying because he had a mic down in this little cavern that they put him in down there.
Oh, God.
And it was quite interesting. I'll tell you, it's so long ago, and I was so intent upon what I was doing and so worried that the career would go south that you don't remember the specifics of it. But it must have been a riot to watch this serious weather guy next to a puppet.
I mean, the Alley Cat seemed pretty serious to me on top of current events. And
yeah, well, it was an innocent
How about this Nixon?
Thing.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, I know.
How about this H.R. Halderman? I kind of like him.
It's funny. He would, when you touched on certain issues, Jack was very conservative, and this would bother him.
And the Alley Cat would get all nuts about something?
Oh, yeah.
I think they're being really unfair to Nixon. He seems like a really good guy to me.
So the Alley Cat would editorialize
about news content? There would be moments when he actually, Carl Zimmerman was our news director up there, and he would editorial. You know, he did editorials. And Albert would sometimes offer his counter to the editorial. And, you know, I was the young kid on the block, just starting his career. And so there wasn't much I could do. You just kind of went along with the program.
You leave it up to the hippies and the dirty liberals, and we're going to lose Vietnam.
I know.
You're like, yeah, there's a heavy ranged storm coming in.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Oh, it, God.
And he would... The format was this. He would we'd open up, and somebody would knit him something to promote a church bazaar or something like that, and he would tell who had sent it to him.
Did he have hands?
And then, what's that?
Did
yeah,
he,
have hands? He did. They weren't working hands, as I recall. They were just sewn on.
Just decoration.
But it was really quite interesting. That was definitely an era, no question about it.
We're going to the VF Hall tonight, where we're going to kick some hippie ass. Yeah, right. Come on out, fish fry.
I know. You know, every time I get, when I would get start here, they had said, you know, we got to bring that puppet down, too. And I said, oh, brother, please.
Wow.
But I got a kick out of the way people enjoyed. You know, I love Milwaukee. God. It was a great town to work in. It's a beautiful town. And the people there were really nice.
You ever get freaked out in Milwaukee? Because I do all the time when I'm up there. Because if you're in downtown Milwaukee and you can have cognitive dissonance where you're like, you're at a street corner and you're like, am I in Chicago or am I in Milwaukee? There's because the light is the same. The lake is right there. It kind of ends.
True.
There's just a few blocks in downtown Milwaukee where this happens.
Yeah.
But it feels
like a Chicago neighborhood.
Well, it feels like downtown Chicago from two or three blocks.
It's a really neat city. I mean, there's the same sort of fascinating ethnic blend up there. You have people from all over, and it's it makes for a very interesting city. It really does, just like our Chicago.
Well, that was kind of upset. I get why they did it, but when the Packers used to play four games a season at Milwaukee County Stadium, and
makes sense.
And it was and that was always a more fun event because it was easier to get to.
And those were the Al McGuire days too, you know, up at Marquette,
right?
And of course that's Mark Sapelza's old alma mater up there,
right?
So
there's a lot going on in Milwaukee. In Milwaukee, of course, you know, like Happy Days took place in Milwaukee,
right.
And there was Milwaukee had like this moment where it was the hip Midwest town to be associated with because it had a big national profile. Of course, beer, right? I mean, Miller, you can't...
Oh, yeah, the Schlitz Brewery, you passed it all the time. I remember some executive at Schlitz at the time wanted a forecast. His office called me, and they sent over a collection of... For giving the forecast, they sent me a collection of Schlitz glasses, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I don't know whatever happened to them, but it was...
Albert the Alley Cat.
I got him.
Probably swiped them.
He took them home.
Albert. You had to watch him.
I want to ask you, speaking of Milwaukee, speaking of Wisconsin, I'm going to kind of stretch this out a little bit. In southern Wisconsin, you know, this Foxconn plant
was
going in.
That story was crazy.
Near, just over the Illinois border, right? Mm-hmm. Those are the people who make the iPhone. They're going to be making components for the iPhone here.
Yes.
In Wisconsin. It's a big win for Wisconsin to get this.
Yes.
And they're very excited about it. And, you know, the governor of Wisconsin has been, not only the governor worked very hard on it, but it's Paul Ryan and all that. Well, today it was announced that they are going to stick, and this is the way it was described, a 7 million gallon a day straw into Lake Michigan.
Wow.
For this plant.
Yeah.
Now, there are other kinds of plants all over the Great Lakes that have these kinds of what they call straws, which is they say straw because the plant is not on the lake. So they have to get the piping to the lake.
Right.
It's a separate, unlike the steel plants and all that stuff. So they're going to be doing that and taking 7 million gallons a day out of Lake Michigan.
And, you know, Ro, that's carefully monitored. I think the Supreme Court's even been involved in deciding the allocation of water that you can take out of the Great Lakes. And the Canadians have to be, conferred with as well on that.
Well, not anymore, apparently, because the EPA, by the way, the EPA did not weigh in on this. This was done solely by the state of Wisconsin. The EPA said that was okay. Mm-hmm. Not a shocker to anybody.
No.
But we're in that moment where it was like, oh, we got this. This is about the jobs. We're going to go in and we're going to do it. Now, the They are going to take a percentage of that water and treat it and return it to the lake.
Wow.
And then the rest is going to be a waste and evaporation.
But you just wonder how much is that going to be monitored in a company that means so much to that area.
Yeah.
And you just it seems like they're kind of taking advantage of a technicality here. It used to be that you had to get the region's governors to sign off before you could use any lake water. But there's some kind of an issue here where certain types of industries have been allowed to use lake water. They said beer and soft drinks was always exempt.
Well, if those are your products,
then you were allowed to use some of the lake water, and somehow they're thinking this exemption and Foxconn qualifies for it.
Very interesting. I had not seen that story, so this is, I think, fascinating, but it raises all kinds of issues, doesn't it? I mean,
it does.
I'm sure there'll be some pretty active discussion about that in some quarters. With the current administration, I'm sure they'll say go with it.
Well, it's already done.
Yeah, is that right?
It's done. Yeah.
Yeah.
There wasn't a discussion about it. That's the point
Not
of the
enough,
story.
Actually, yeah. It's what shocked me.
The decision has already been made.
There's a change, huh?
Yeah. And they're going to be allowed to do it.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. You don't need that 7 million gallons.
Right.
Well, there's a trillion something. Or others. I mean, I forget what the you once said it in Lake Michigan alone.
Yeah.
Let alone the Great Lakes systems. I mean, that's 7 million sounds like a lot. It turns out
no.
It's
like 20 trillion gallons of water. It's 20% of the world's fresh water. Resides mm-hmm. in the Great Lakes.
Yeah.
And that's pretty amazing. Every time the lake goes up an inch, just an inch increase on Lake Michigan, that's 380 billion additional gallons of water that is
out
there.
So it turns out it's a drop in the proverbial bucket in some respects. But the thing is, it's a different era in terms of this. We've gone back. And next thing you know, we're going to have a Native American in a boat crying over the water like they did in the 70s.
Well, there's concern about the loosening of environmental efforts to monitor our Great Lakes, I know, under this current EPA. And that's not good. We depend on this water as our water source here, too.
Yeah. Did you see this? There was an Asian company that was going to send tankers into the Great Lakes.
Yes, I heard about
that.
And
take out millions
of gallons.
I'm sure
that'll go over like a lead balloon.
A day out of the Great Lakes just to take over to Asia.
Wow.
And that has been stopped at least for the moment. So,
you know, I went to a conference. There have always been discussions that come up, or not always, but there have been over the years, about building a pipeline to the Southwest to, you know, from the Great Lakes. And I remember I was at a conference out in Colorado back in the mid-80s, and there were Canadian meteorologists there, and they came up to me, and knowing I was from Chicago, and said, you know, you can't take that water without clearing it with us. And I said, look, I'm the last one in the world to talk to about this. I know nothing about it other than what I've read. But I agree with you. You know, you guys have, this is a shared commodity, natural resource.
Right. Hey, it's ours. That's why I want to look at it. It's the one thing my dad told me when I was a kid and we lived near the lake. And he would say to me, listen, this is the greatest natural, when all
it
hell
is.
Breaks loose in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago
will
be in very good shape because we have fresh water.
You'll be thankful.
I did a podcast with Mayor Emanuel on climate change earlier this week down at City Hall. And we were talking about that. He said, you know, as we look to attract businesses and all, this is a great resource. And they're, you know, cities like Dallas, Fort Worth, or Phoenix, or places in Florida, name the city, they've got to be looking at that resource with envy.
There's no question about it. Because, like, even in St. Louis, it's just nothing but our poop going down to the Mississippi.
Right.
All right. Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it.
Ro.
Tom Skilling, by the way, brought
to you by
PermaSeal Basement Systems.
How about that? Sponsored, huh?
There you go. How about that?
I think that's pretty cool.
Thank you, Tom.
Appreciate the Albert clip. I had never heard that before.
There will be not a little something extra in your check for that.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Here is, right now, Judy going to tell us what's coming up in a few minutes in the WGN newsroom.
Did she have a sexual relationship with the president?
Yes.
Okay. She also says, according to this document, that there were tangible items, photos, images, that she had them, and according to this agreement, she won't turn them over. She will never release them publicly. Does she still have photos, images, text messages, documents that verify this claim?
That's a question that Ms. Daniels will have to ultimately answer.
Do you know the answer to that question?
I do know the answer, and I'm not at liberty to disclose it this morning.
Riders on the storm.
Mm. Mm. Riders of the Storm. Well, his one rider is the one that we're interested in at the moment. Michael Monaco is with us, our legal analyst.
Thank God you're here.
You're going to see a great debate between two great legal minds here. That of Michael Monaco, one of the great lawyers in the Western Hemisphere, and me, Rokan.
One of the great experts in pornography.
I was an employee.
That helps in this case.
I am one of the only people in the brand of Court TV history to host a show branded by Court TV, and I was not a lawyer. Everybody else there was a lawyer.
Did they think you were a lawyer? Did you tell them you were a lawyer?
I'm not certain what they believed.
Did you fake
it? I never indicated to them that I was or was not a lawyer.
Yeah. Interesting.
We never had the conversation. Yeah. All right. Okay. So, Stormy Daniels. Here's basically where this sits right now. I was going to say lays, but that's the wrong word. Mm-hmm. Here we go. Stormy Daniels, porn star, we think. I've never seen her work.
No, the people on the social media are confirming and providing links to such work.
That's okay.
And it exists.
Yeah. All right. So, she was said to have had she now claims to have had an intimate affair with Donald Trump, at least through her attorney, an intimate affair with Donald Trump that lasted a number of months, going back to the mid-2000s, right after the time, that sort of lined up right after the time that Baron von Trump was born.
Came into this world.
Right? And Melania at home, thinking how she was going to be avoiding Donald Trump like the cat with the white stripe on the back that was always trying to avoid Pepe Le Pew.
Uh-huh.
So that's the way that was going, at least for that moment. Now, so we flash forward to 2016, where she signs a contract with Michael Cohen, the lawyer for Donald Trump.
And days before the election.
Days before the election to stay silent about this affair. Right? I have, by the way, I have in my possession right here a copy of the court filing that was entered into the Superior Court of the State of California for the County of Los Angeles just a few hours ago, in which they are seeking relief.
A declaratory judgment.
Here and
filed today.
They would like out of this contract because Donald Trump, using the alias David Dennison, didn't sign the hush agreement.
The agreement, right? So it was signed by Cohen, who was representing the entity that was paying the money,
LLC that was paying her,
and it was signed by Stephanie Clifford,
who is AKA Stormy Daniels,
AKA Peggy Peterson. In that regard.
Yes.
And also so Stormy. Yeah.
PP and DD. DD being Donald Trump and PP being... So the boy was DD and the girl was PP.
Yeah, exactly.
I have already figured out what that stands for. All right. So now, I'm going to ask you this, Michael Monaco. First of all, I don't think anybody's surprised by this. Even the president's most religious, most staunch defenders are like, so what on this? Which now means it's all over, because now both Republicans and Democrats have suborned this kind of behavior by their fearless leaders, and they just don't care anymore.
Well, I think people are accepting cheating. I think there are still lines, hopefully, that you can't
cross.
It's
like that SNL routine, wasn't it? Does this matter? Nope, that doesn't matter.
Right, exactly. Yeah. No longer matter.
Nope. How about this?
Doesn't matter anymore.
What about this? Nope, this doesn't matter.
Now, I mean, there are some lines that would be crossed. One would imagine that's why the president probably should not have supported the goof down in Alabama. But that's a separate issue.
Yes.
One would imagine that.
That would be a line.
Let's not confuse the issue here with mere politics, my friends.
No,
discuss it as a point of law.
Yes.
If Ms. PP, Stormy Daniels, nay, Stephanie Clifford, if she took $130,000... from this sham dummy corporation registered in the state of Delaware, run by Michael Cohen, for the express purpose of paying her the $130 to keep her mouth shut about what might have been open in the mid-2000s, she took it. How is she possibly able to pierce the deal, even if he didn't sign it with his fake name, the president, that is? If she took the money, isn't it over?
Well, she took the money, and now her lawyers are going to court to seeking a declaratory judgment to protect her if she decides to become public.
The penalty, according to the deal that she struck with Michael Cohen in 2016, the porn star struck, was every time she goes out and tells a story, they charge her $1 million.
Yeah, so she's trying to avoid that. So, and not only that, they were apparently, according to the lawyer, they had harassed her to and bullied her into making a denial of the event recently, you know, since the election, because she did make a public denial about having an affair with
Yes, she did.
Yeah, she did.
And then she recanted it about an hour and a half later.
Yeah.
But she had to, right? Isn't that part of what she signed? Or
yes.
She felt compelled to do that?
That's
legally?
Right. That's what her lawyer said today. Her lawyer said that she was bullied into saying that, and she didn't. He was asked, well, was it false? Oh, yeah, it was false. He was very, very clear on that. It was
so
false.
She's not out yet because she needs this declared. This thing you just said.
Yes, a declaratory judgment.
Declaratory judgment, yes.
From that lawsuit.
Clear something out, though, Mike. It's not illegal to accept hush money for your silence, right? That part of it, you can take money to say, I'll be quiet. Is that okay?
Well, it's not illegal to do that.
No. The problem is, the issue here is whether or not it's a valid contract.
That's part of the issue. And I suppose
Let's go to that. I want to stop on that because Anna has asked the exact central question to this. Is this a valid contract if Donald Trump doesn't fake a signature of a fake name on it?
Yeah.
And I say yes, it's a valid contract.
Well, it could be.
Because she accepted the money.
Oral contracts can be legal contracts. I mean, you and I could agree to...
There's nothing in this about oral, I don't think.
I think it is.
Oh, no, there is. Wait, hold on. There is. Page 26.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty salacious read, yeah. Isn't it? Yeah. I mean, she said she came forward after the Access Hollywood tapes. And
yeah.
Then she was approached by his personal attorney 12 or 13 days before the election.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they settled.
And
your point is true. They could have reached an agreement, an oral agreement, not to, to keep this quiet. Not unlike, I suppose, the agreement that Hastert struck with the young boy that was accusing him of
that. But that was a crime.
Well, that was a crime, right.
It's illegal to have a contract to keep a crime from being revealed,
most judges would say that is a violation of the commonality of, you know, that you cannot, it's not good judgment to defend criminal acts.
Mm-hmm.
Just like here, they might say it is not a appropriate use of the courts to protect an act like this, you know, having an inappropriate sexual liaison,
mm-hmm.
and then to seek it, try to keep it quiet.
Right, we can't, illegal activity. So, again, it has always come to my attention that in situations where there is a pay for in a contract, I'm paying you for this.
Right.
So, in a pay for in a contract, it seems to me that once you accept the money, the contract is valid.
That's it. That's true. That's under the normal contract law. That's true.
All right. Judy, who won this? Thank you.
Where's your 10 bucks going?
There's your 10 bucks, Judy. That's what's going on here.
Yeah. But this is not about the money, because she doesn't care. Because all he wants is for her to be able to publicize what happened. And whatever this happens of this case, there will be something made public, like it was made public so far in the complaint that you just saw.
Well, he didn't rule it out in his Today Show interview. Her attorney said, you know, would you rule out the chance of her selling her story or profiting off it? And he said, no, that seemed like that's something they want to do.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this whole thing is about allowing her to make money more than the $130,000 that she was already paid on this deal. And will Cohen seek to have his $130,000 back? Maybe.
He wants it from somebody.
He wants
right
it
now.
Somebody.
And I don't care who's paying it, but if Mr. President or porn star, I want my $130,000 back.
You can almost see the president saying, well, listen, Cohen made a lot of money on me over the years.
Yeah, there was just a $200,000 payment to Cohen's law firm for work that he has just done.
There you go.
So that's the question, though. There is a story that Cohen's asking for the money back. He's griping to his friends about that. I don't believe that.
No, I don't believe it either.
I mean, there are some things. I think there are people out there tattling here trying
to make let's make, no, there's no doubt that the president knew because one thing a lawyer wouldn't do, a lawyer would not settle this case without telling his client.
Yeah, that's for sure.
That wouldn't happen.
Yeah, but I guess the point is, okay, he had sex with a porn star
while his wife had just given birth.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen. This is his third wife. He was.
Oh, good point.
Still
excellent
married.
Point. Excellent point, bro.
He was still married.
Excellent point.
Well, I mean, she knows where she came from, right?
What is that supposed to mean? Don't slam her, for heaven's sakes.
Are you kidding me?
What are you trying to do?
You don't think she understood what she was doing in this relationship?
She's an Einstein.
She got the Einstein visa.
She did. She got the Einstein
visa. For extraordinary skills.
Exactly.
That's what
not
she
in picking husbands.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So let's not kid ourselves here.
Oh, I am shocked, bro.
Her job was, I mean, you know, he was married and on another date when they met, by the way. So you have to remember
you
how
kinda
that
You kind of know
whole,
what you're dealing with then, you know?
All right. And
you sort of know.
And she got pregnant right away, I think.
No, not right away.
Soon.
No, they got married and then she got pregnant.
That's my point.
Yeah, but they were together for a number of years before they were married.
I see.
But you could see why he'd want to cover up the relationship with the porn star.
Yeah, you could see why. Not to mention he's running for president.
Even if it is the third wife, I think you kind of understand
that. Yeah,
why.
Not to mention that he was seeking the evangelical vote.
Mm-hmm. Which he
well, they don't
got.
Care because the they evangelicals have decided.
They gave him a mulligan.
They gave him a mulligan? No. They've given the Cyrus. He is now Cyrus, the ancient king of Persia, who was not in the Judeo Christian, but it was this before Christ. He was this that
he's free,
he was
he's free
he was
to do whatever.
Not a man of God as it is being presented, but he did these things. He was brought by God to the situation to smote evil.
Well, one of the evangelical pastors did say we're giving him a mulligan on this.
They're out there telling. Go read this thing. Go look up Trump Cyrus.
Oh, please, the last thing I want to do is read that. Please,
it's unbelievable the pretzeling that has gone on here.
Wait till a girl in Thailand gets her 5 minutes of fame.
All right, I got. You know what? We've run out of time for that.
You'll have to come back for that one, Mike.
Yeah. 5 minutes of fame from the girl in Thailand who's got tapes, according to her,
mm-hmm.
with the Russian oligarch who was hired by Manafort.
Yeah. Who hired Manafort?
Who hired Manafort?
That's right. Yeah, the guy Manafort worked
right.
for the, this
That's
Russian
right.
oligarch, Ed Deripaska.
Right. Big time.
Yeah,
and he had a big boat, which are they're always nice, bro. Those big boats.
Mm-hmm. Thank you,
My
Mike
pleasure.
Monaco.
Nice
here
to see you,
is
too, Mike.
Judy Pilak, who just lost her $10. I think I smote him legally. What do you got coming up at the top of the hour? Bro Concho with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 W, G, and the N.
The W, the G, and the N.
Mm-hmm.
World's greatest
newspaper. Yeah, the only problem is it doesn't have a newspaper anymore.
Nope.
It's a whole other deal.
Not anymore.
Don't even get me started.
Don't worry about that.
All right, you know what it's time for, mm-hmm. don't you? Because it is 5 o'clock somewhere.
It's the top five on the Rokon Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokon Show with Anna DeVlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right, we will.
Let's do it.
Checking in at
number five.
President is expected to sign an order by the end of the week implementing controversial tariffs on foreign-made aluminum and steel. But today in a briefing, Sarah Sanders was asked if the president worried that the move might hurt his base supporters.
Look, the president has been talking about this for a long time. It shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody. Other countries have created unfair trade policies for decades that have harmed our national and economic security. The president wants a strong economy and a strong national security. And a strong U.S. economy benefits all Americans, particularly by helping us maintain a strong military and defend U.S. national security interests. And he's going to continue every day to fight for making sure that we have strong both national and economic security.
The EU is going to hit him where it hurts. Is he prepared to take the hit?
The president is prepared to protect our country.
So one little problem with this
mm-hmm.
argument.
Just one.
Is that there are, yeah, just one. There's only one. First of all, it is sticking our fingers in the eyes of our closest allies, Canada and Germany. And other places that have been very important to us in terms of trade, and by a poop load, and Mexico that buys a gigantic amount of product from the United States. Canada, we have a trade surplus with Canada. We're making the money off of Canada, if he wants to look at it that way. There's more to it than just making money. But the for because the government doesn't actually make the money. It's the businesses that make the money. And today, he's already heard from a lot of people in the heartland, in the states of Michigan and in the states of Iowa, specifically, that are like, what are you doing? Because Iowa, the amount of grain that goes, and Iowa farm, basically farm byproduct, that goes up to Canada is gigantic.
Well, and you've seen a lot of Republicans, people within his own party, Speaker Ryan and many, many others say, well, let's get a little more specific with this. Let's not do these blanket trade, tariff policies wouldn't be a net positive for our economy. Possibly could slow down growth. It could raise consumer prices. You could have a reaction here that you didn't intend. And you already saw a manufacturer in Tennessee say that they're going to hold off on a $250 million expansion because of this tariff idea and want to hear more about the policy. So he's being prodded into being very specific and very narrow with the countries that this affects. And
yeah, can I just throw something out there?
Yeah.
You know, for hundreds of years, politicians have been making really bad ideas into campaign promises because they sound good.
And then they don't come true,
right?
For
but
reasons.
But they're not really a good idea, but they sound like, but they play to people's raw emotions. Like, yeah, that sounds like that could work.
Yeah.
And it turns out not to. But the ones that have the really bad ideas and then actually enact them.
Mm-hmm.
9 times out of 10 ends in some sort of ruinous thing, which involves handcuffs, the world court, people where you're in a cage and everybody else is listening on headphones to what the defense is. I mean, it's like he's not seeing this for what it is. This was a bad idea. There's nobody in his economic sphere that thinks that this is a good idea. He wants to do it, so they're trying to come up with a way to do it. But when a Gary Cohen decides he's got to walk out on this, the Nazis weren't enough. This was the final straw. You know this is a bad idea.
Well, and you can lose elections over this in the midterms because a lot of Republicans will be running on the strong economy, and that's a very powerful thing to voters. And if this sort of takes a turn, if it complicates that picture, then it's a terrible idea.
Checking in it.
Number four.
Riders on the storm.
Oh, boy. Riders. Michael Avenatti, the attorney for porn actress. I like how people are debating whether to call her a porn star or a porn actress. Everybody gets that a porn star isn't really a star. It's just somebody who's willing to be in a porn movie.
It's debatable.
Right.
Some are stars.
Stormy, though I don't know if she is or she isn't. I don't know. I don't know anything about her until now. Now I know too much.
She was a one-hit wonder until now. She's making her comeback.
So she told the attorney told the Today Show that the president knew about the hush money paid right before the 2016 election. And it was all to keep her silence about their sexual relationship.
Did she have a sexual relationship with the president?
Yes.
Okay. She also says, according to this document, that there were tangible items, photos, images, that she had them. And according to this agreement, she won't turn them over. She will never release them publicly. Does she still have photos, images, text messages, documents that verify this claim?
That's a question that Ms. Daniels will have to ultimately answer.
Do you know the answer to that question?
I do know the answer, and I'm not at liberty to disclose that this morning.
Riders on the storm.
All right, no, wait. See, I didn't like that answer, by the way.
Why?
Because if they have it, I think they just go, yeah, I know, we got the pictures. Because that means that they're still negotiating. See, this is the thing that, this is why I cannot take this story seriously, and I don't think that this adds up to much. But unless they were using campaign funds to pay her, that would potentially be a violation. But there isn't really anything illegal about entering into an agreement for someone to keep their mouth shut about something that would be embarrassing.
No.
But not illegal. If it were an illegal act, it'd be one thing, but it's not illegal.
And now it seems like she would like to make some more money out of it, is what right. her attorney was made it pretty clear that she, that they would not rule out any opportunity right. for her to go ahead and sell the story and that kind of thing. So it seems that may be what this is about.
I'm overly, according to my critics on the interwebs, I'm overly eager to criticize the president. In this case, I think this is a ridiculous case. But it does, the only thing it does prove to me is that the people who, the moralists in this country, whether it was moralists who were Democrats during the, they were during the Clinton years, and now the moralists who are Republicans, who stand up and go, oh, no, this is all right. Or, no, but he's about God anyway. Are all full of crap. But that's a separate issue. It's the only thing this whole thing proves to me. But I go on now with the attorney speaking to NBC. He says that Michael Cohen, the attorney for the president, knew that this money was actually coming from Donald Trump.
Here's the problem. She accepted $130,000. Does she have to return it? She received payment. She got what she contracted for. Did she not?
No, absolutely not. Because that agreement, it's not just about the $130,000. There's other obligations of Mr. Trump pursuant to that agreement. There's release obligations and other things. And it's our position that that the entire agreement is null and void because he did not sign it. Now she may ultimately return the money.
Riders on the storm.
Oh, gee.
All right. And finally, Ms. Daniels, Mr. Attorney, does she still want to sell this story?
No, she's looking to disclose the truth about what happened.
So would you say she won't accept money to tell her story publicly if she prevails in your lawsuit?
I'm not going to make that representation.
No.
I don't think she's ultimately determined what she's going to do.
Yeah.
But at this point, in light of the amount of misinformation that Mr. Cohen has put out there to the Wall Street Journal, Washington Post and others, I think it's time for her to tell her story and for the public to decide who's telling the truth.
Riders on the storm.
God. Oh, God. Let's not take our eye off the balls here. There is something else going on that is particularly of import to America. And we dealt with it in number one, and we dealt with these other things. There's the national security issues afoot here. You got Jared Kushner down in Mexico negotiating NAFTA, and he doesn't have a security clearance. Right? You got the Mueller investigation. You got all these other things going on. This is a distraction. And the fact that we're paying attention to it because Stormy Daniels is running around, you know, trying to make a splash is a ridiculous thing. There are other more important issues, but yet we're stuck on it. I'll tell you, the better one is a woman in Thailand. I believe her more.
Is she Russian?
The Russian who's the Belarusian who is in Thailand.
The Instagram star.
Who's in Thailand in a prison trying to tell us that she's got tapes of Trump so she can get out of the prison in Thailand, who, by the way, that makes her not exactly 100% credible, but I'm more interested in her story than I am in Stormy Daniels who had an affair. At least she ties Donald Trump to this Deripaska guy.
Was there glitter involved?
Don't touch me. Right now, Judy's got the WGN News preview for what's coming up at the bottom of the hour.
Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m., then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events. See Chicago, 10:30 p.m. on WGN-TV.
Top 5 continues. We have worked our way up to
number 3.
This never-before-seen video is the smoking gun in the upcoming Fox special, The Lost Confession, which is airing Sunday night. And it provides the reason that O.J. Simpson went to Nicole Brown Simpson's house the night of the murder.
Hmm.
This is an interview that O.J. Simpson did with Judith Regan, who was the book publisher, right? Very famous book publisher in the 90s in New York. And this was before the deal. And this book was to be titled, If I Did It.
Let's just walk through the night.
First of all, this is very difficult for me to do this. It was very difficult for me because it's hypothetical. In the book, the hypothetical is... Charlie came by and mentioned something about what was going on at her house. This guy, Charlie, shows up, the guy who I had recently become friends with. And I don't know why you'd been by Nicole's house, but it told me you wouldn't believe what's going on over there. And I remember thinking, well, whatever's going on over there has got to stop.
Oh, boy.
Hmm.
Well, it did.
It certainly did. I think I'm over OJ, officially.
And finally.
Number one.
What I meant was number two.
Oh, this is number two. You didn't save the best one for last?
Let me do that again.
Number two.
To me, those balls are perfect. I can only speak for myself. I don't want anyone touching the balls, rubbing the balls. To me, those balls are perfect.
Millions tuned in to the first of five episodes of the Facebook docuseries Tom vs. Time.
Yep.
Said they had to wait a month for the sixth and final episode. There are still several days before it goes live on March 12th. Good Morning America aired a brief clip which shows Tom Brady discussing how he and his family reacted to losing this year's Super Bowl.
That was the first time that I had seen my kids really react in that way. Like, you know, Benny was crying, BB was crying, and they were sad for me and sad for the Patriots.
Yeah.
But
nothing ever goes right for you.
I just said to him, I said, the guys, this is a great lesson. You know, we don't always win. We try our best.
No, you kind
and
of always
sometimes
win.
Sometimes it doesn't go the way we want.
That usually back, does go the way he wants.
That background music, was that pulled from The Bachelor or what?
Oh, God.
I mean, really.
Oh, is that awful? That is awful. Oh, come on, Tom Brady.
Well.
The background music is a little over the top.
I can't believe that I didn't win my 1,000,000th Super Bowl.
The kids were devastated.
I only have five.
I gained 5 ounces over it.
But I'm still not going to eat strawberries and do my weird diet. Okay. That continues.
He had a scoop of actual ice cream. Went off the deep end after the
game. Probably is an important lesson that his kids do learn. You don't win all the time because they haven't learned that until that moment.
Because always the children of super rich celebrities always learn that lesson early in life, that things aren't always perfect.
They're always well-rounded kids.
Yeah. All right. Finally.
Number one.
Okay, so now, for the last number of weeks, Oprah Winfrey has repeatedly said, I'm not going to run for president, despite what happened at the Golden Globes, right?
Mm-hmm.
That big speech.
Yep, a lot of people calling for her to make it real, do it.
So, in an interview with People magazine, she says that she needed a clear sign from God to make sure that she wasn't going to run for president, or she was going to run for president. She needed God. Mm-hmm.
Needed God.
So, God
spoke. Oprah, Stephen, what's up? Hey!
Oh, hey! Hey, God, it's God, everybody. Give it up for the Lord. I apologize. God stops by every once in a while. He's a fan. Can I help you, Lord? I'm kind of in the middle of talking to somebody important.
Oh, I know, Stephen. I'm a huge fan.
That's great to hear. I'm a big fan of yours, too, God. I really am.
Wow. Oprah knows who I am? I can't wait to tell Jesus. I'm going to look so cool. How do I make this clearer, Oprah? Oh, I know. Oprah Winfrey 2020. Yes, she can.
Very cute, Ben.
All right. That was on Stephen Colbert last night. All right. Here we go. Let's just wrap this thing up, shall we?
The top five at five.
This is an intense place, as every White House. It's not abnormal that you would have people come and go.
But actually, it is actually abnormal. No administration in recent history has had this much turnover.
But it's not abnormal to have turnover.
Trump's in the White House. All the staffers have come back. No Sally Yates. She's gone. He made her pack her bags. Mike Flynn might go to jail, he better not drop the soap. Angie Reed was shown the door, but why nobody knows. James Comey's Russian case, the White House can't have that. He wasn't loyal, so Trump stabbed him in the back. Mike Dubke didn't last, Walter Shaw kicked out the door. Sean Spicer did his best, but the president wanted more. Now Omarosa's gone, now why they go do that? Know what you're thinking, and it's not because she's black. Steve Bannon lost his mind, and Gorka walked away. Tom Price did
Dina Powell has nothing left to say. It's only been a year he's sending staffers back. Mike Short, Rince, Priebus, Scaramucci, y'all come back. Rob Porter had to go. Raphael has disappeared. Hope Hicks and Gary Cohn, who else the end is near?
When I read, well, oh, gee, maybe people don't want to work for Trump. And believe me, everybody wants to work in the White House. So many people want to come in. I have a choice of anybody. I could take any position in the White House, and they love this White House because we have energy like rarely before.
Mm-hmm. Thank God. A.B. Stoddard is with us right now. And
it's a bit of a staffing crisis at the White House.
That is just genius.
Yeah, that is our... Our it sonic is. Genius right there, Brian Altimer, does all that stuff for us. It's amazing stuff. And it's all true. This is the problem with this, is that all these people have left, and yet the president, and I love, you gotta give the guy credit for this. Doesn't matter what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You want him to be the captain of the Titanic telling you, we beat the iceberg, it's fine, totally. We're all good. You know, I mean, that's what he does. He just, no matter what.
It is so true. Everything is loving and special, and it's like a beautiful moment. Everything's going great, and everything has great spirit.
That's right. I do love the fact that it's high energy, too. That's his whole thing. It's got to be high energy. You know, it's got a high impact, high energy.
But then he likes conflict. I thought that was the other part that was sort of interesting to chew on for a little bit.
That did creep me out yesterday. That whole, I love conflict. It's like, oh, I love watching it. And then I thought, oh, that's creepy. I don't like to want to know what he likes to watch. That's just weird.
Right. All right. Exactly. Too much information.
So a former White House official, Obama White House official told me today that they're very concerned at this White House currently. Now, how they would know that is pretty clear, because these kinds of permanent government people talk to each other, that they're very concerned that Gary Cohen is leaving, because it's now going to leave him, the president, with sycophants, with people who agree with him. And that's a dangerous place to be, because even though he says he likes the conflict, he doesn't really want anybody disagreeing with him. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's the problem, is that if you look at, you know, the fact that McMaster's likely leaving soon, Tillerson is obviously on, you know, temporary duty here at this point. John Kelly is on exit watch. And then you look at this situation with Gary Cohn leaving. You know, you just know, especially with, you just look at this trade situation. Mm-hmm. This has been going on for months and months and months, if not a year or more. It didn't just pop up last week the way it did, and the actual minute and hour that it did was because of other set of circumstances. But Gary Cohn and all these other people had effectively shut this down all of this time. And so the idea that he's going to have, Maggie Haberman in the New York Times today tweeted that Wilbur Ross just wants to keep his job, so he's like over agrees with Trump no matter what Trump says. And then you've got Navarro, Peter Navarro, who Jared found in on the Googles when his father-in-law asked him to do some research into the threat of the Chinese, you know, economic dominance. And he found a book on Amazon called Death by China, and it was by Peter Navarro. So Peter Navarro is now running the trade policy in this country because Donald Trump, you know, Donald Trump agrees with him, and he got to secretly plan these tariffs with him behind Gary Cohn's back. And then you've got, so Ross, the only constituency for this besides the president is Navarro and Ross.
Oh gosh.
And the idea that people who've been able to talk him out of things are running for the exits or being kicked out or, you know, combination of everything, is really concerning. And it, you know, we don't know what the next topic will be, but it is absolutely the case that their pressure campaign to stop this tariff idea worked for an entire year. And then now, you know, the gas gets blown.
I thought it was interesting in Cohn's resignation letter what he did not say. It was pretty standard in that he thanked for the honor to serve. He did not thank the president. And it's interesting because you wonder now as you move forward, to your point, AB, he was more of a pro-business. He had this pro-business agenda, and there's more of a protectionist agenda on trade in this White House. And you feel as if that, that pushback and that conversation would be a healthy one to have, someone representing sort of a pro-business agenda and have those kinds of conversations. And if they move in the direction of an economic advisor who just totally agrees with the president, or if that's that those are the only people who will now take these jobs, that's super concerning.
Yeah, and you look at something. You look at this issue, and the fact is, Gary Cohn, you know, reportedly has, among others, kind of tried to educate the president on the benefits of free trade, the injurious effects of the tariffs like these, the unintended consequences, the obvious consequences, mm-hmm. And. What a trade imbalance actually is, and he does not want to listen, because unlike, you know, when he has Dianne Feinstein in for the gun meeting or the Bill of Love immigration discussion, and then he changes his position a million times, this is where the president's mind has been since the 1980s. And first it was the Japanese, and now it's the Chinese. He is absolutely convinced of this. And so Gary Cohn is leaving knowing that he stopped it as long as he could. But he doesn't feel that, you know, now that it's out, he doesn't feel he can bring it back in. Also, if you look at, you know, obviously, just a goal like tax reform, it's over. I mean, they mm-hmm. actually succeeded in doing it, you know, by their Christmas deadline. So there's this strange discussion today about how Gary Cohn would be open to a cabinet secretary position. Hmm. And, of course, those could pop open at any time, given the fact that no one can stop flying private or first class or decorating their offices with large budgets.
Well, I love, tell you, I miss scandals like that. I miss a good overspending on your office scandal. We had that one with Illinois, right? I miss garden variety issues. Even I got to tell you, I think a nice little respite for us is Stormy Daniels, because that's something that adds up to nothing, right? I mean, at the end of the day, unless they were using campaign funds and the president knew about it, there isn't anything illegal about what was going on there. And in the meantime, and the thing is, and I get a little annoyed by the fact that oxygen is being drawn out of the room by her attorney here, Stormy Daniels' attorney, is that there were major developments yesterday in the Russia probe. This thing where Sam Nunberg got drunk and then decided to go on every cable news show he could find on Monday. Crazy. And basically spilled the beans that the president, of course he knew about the meeting with. Now, again, he had been out of the White House for a number of months at this point, but he talks to Roger Stone every day, who was still in contact with mm-hmm. with Trump in 2016. And, of course, Trump knew about the White House meeting between Don Jr. and Jared and Bannon with the Russians in June of 2016, because he was talking about it two days before.
Yeah.
To the press, in which he said, "Don't worry, on Monday I'm gonna make a speech and I'm gonna tell you everything."
Major speech
and everything about Hillary, which never came to be because the Russians wouldn't give up the goods in that meeting because they wanted their money back.
You know, the other thing is, Ro, the piece in the New York Times that I think broke last night or early this morning, but I was traveling and I finally read it, about the guy from the UAE meeting in the Seychelles with Eric Prince and some high-level Russian bank guy who's connected to Putin and was gathering foreign government loans for projects inside Russia. And the three of them all got together under the auspices. It was understood that Eric Prince was speaking for the Trump transition team. And then that there were meetings later with this UAE guy in the White House with Bannon and I believe with Jared. And it's really Mueller. The story is that Mueller's looking at it, but it's
a big deal.
Example that yes,
and we should go back and explain.
And this went into the administration. It's not the campaign. It went into the administration.
Yeah.
And it's all about the Emirati's connection to the Russians and the Russians, influence within.
I got to stop you right here. Do you see what's just breaking? New York Times, Maggie Haberman is reporting, Trump spoke with key witnesses about matters discussed with special counsel.
Oh, Lord, have mercy upon us. This is what happens. This is the problem. How could you go in and replace Gary Cohn or anyone, right, knowing that just like poor Hope Hicks, he's going to pummel you with Russia stuff all day, and you're going to have to coat yourself in law, legal fees and lawyers, yeah, to just survive. I mean, this is crazy.
Okay, now this is something, that's significant, what just happened there. The reason that is significant is that if he's witness tampering, that is a problem.
That's
a legal problem.
Obstruction
of justice, and thank you. And that's what they were looking for, not just the money laundering. And then they got to go to, you know, Congress, and then we'll see how the Speaker of the House feels about this.
Right. Already
you got, listen, you got your Foxconn plant up in Wisconsin.
Just
you're
be
good
happy.
To go. Get out now while the getting's good. All right, AB, we're going to let you go on that.
Thanks,
I'm sure
AB.
You must. I think you got to go hit your keyboard. Thank you.
I'm going to hit the Twitters. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. All right, AB Stoddard, okay, from Real Clear Politics. Here is Judy from WGN News telling us what's coming up at the top of the hour. Con Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN, giving you company on your ride home. And
yeah,
one of my favorite guests that we have as a regular on this program, mm-hmm, is Bob Baer, one of the most decorated CIA agents in that esteemed agency's history.
Mm-hmm.
And he joins us, and he does it happily. And I know very few
so
people
cool.
who do it happily. So I want to start with this, Bob, because this is a story out of London that I think is getting a lot of people's attention here, about this Russian spy, former Russian spy, who was traded to the West a few years ago, has now been poisoned in London along with his daughter, and now they think it's a nerve agent. There was stories earlier, they were suspecting that it might have been polonium, which is the poison of choice used by the Russian government when they want to take people out, but this appears to be some sort of a nerve agent now, they think, and it is raising suspicions that this was an assassination attempt by the Russians. What do you make of this?
Well, I can't imagine what else it would be. I mean, this guy is a colonel, former GRU, very sensitive position. He's traded for some spies arrested here, and then he immediately goes to work for MI6 and MI5, the two main British intelligence agencies. So he continues to sell out Russia. Now, there's a law in Russia passed in 2006 where Putin is authorized to kill what they call extremists overseas, and that would mean him. And, you know, and you have on top of it his wife, his son, and, you know, were also died under suspicious circumstances. And just the nature of the attack, that it was so quick. I mean, clearly it wasn't. They didn't go to an Italian restaurant and get food poisoning. You know, I don't know if the British police come out and say it's a nerve agent, we're talking about a state. If it were organized crime, these people could have been attacked with guns or knives or
right.
something like that. But
right.
yeah.
but the criminal groups do not use VX. They don't use fentanyl. By the way, fentanyl is just a wonderful way to assassinate somebody, because you can get derivatives of it, which death is pretty quick, and it looks like it's sort of naturally occurring that somebody took a synthetic opioid. But this is something the Russians have been working on. They still have a poison factory. And in Britain, there's probably at least 14 unexplained murders or possible suicides that have very strange forensic results coming out of it. You know, Berezovsky in 2013, they said it was a suicide. He hangs himself, but he's got ligatures that do not match a hanging. And plus he had a broken rib and on and on and on. So this is all very mysterious.
Bob, I want to ask you about that. The use of nerve agents, you said, would indicate it's a state actor. And some of the stories I've read about this say that nerve agents have become a weapon of choice because they're hard to trace. However, in that case of that other Russian spy, Alexander Litvinenko, they did trace it back right to the nuclear plant in Russia and were able to pin it on the Russians.
Exactly. I think the Russians at that point, I don't really know. They may have wanted to be caught simply as a warning to other Russian dissidents working against Putin. But they did trace it back to a state reactor, and it was a state assassination. And the British police, a commission has said, is, you know, in so many words, it was Putin that ordered this. It just couldn't have happened.
Yeah, what are they going to do about it? That's just sort of the spy game. Yeah.
Well, it's what in the old days we used to retaliate that it make it not worth it for Russia. But it's like our elections. We haven't spent a penny on countering Russian hacking, and they're going to be hacking deep into our elections this time around in November. Like, you just count on it because we haven't done anything about it.
That's an excellent pivot to my next question, which is when you saw last week, when you saw Admiral Mike Rogers, NSA chief, plaintively in front of a congressional hearing saying, hey, I don't think enough has been done here. I mean,
he said nothing's been done. I mean, he's concerned about it.
You
know, you got the president attacking the Academy Awards, but not Russia. I just find this very bizarre. But maybe I'm just getting old.
Now, I mean, to me, the issue is this, is that there are a lot of people, I think the president's counting on this, there's a lot of people who just, they don't want to follow this all that closely. They don't really care. They just want, to his point, they care about their family, they care about their jobs, they care about their community, and all the rest of this, they just think is all of this noise. That would be sort of status quo America in Washington, Republicans fighting with Democrats, Democrats fighting with Republicans, cats and dogs. This is not normal, what we're experiencing here. We were attacked by a foreign adversary, a gigantic foreign adversary, the significant foreign adversary in 2016. And it appears that the folks that benefited from that attack in Donald Trump and the people who are around him who may have known things about this, that's the question, did they know anything about this, are benefiting from this, and they're fine, and they're like, okay, well, we're still going to get done what we want to get done, which we think is good for America, but in the meantime, we're also going to be very quiet about the Russians because we don't want them coming after us. That's the way I read it.
Well, people just are not thinking clearly. It's, you know, the whole purpose of a sovereign nation is to defend its political system and its borders. And once you give up defending your borders, sort of like Rome, it's the beginning of the end. Now, that may sound exaggerated and dire, but that's just a fact. I mean, if we can't defend our system, we are open for attack from anybody, and it will affect people. And there are growing numbers of people in this country who are wondering about the loyalty of the president, and that's not a good thing.
Yeah,
that if he's going to side with Vladimir Putin over, you know, the Department of Justice or the FBI or the CIA, you know, if we go around and we continue to demoralize the FBI, which is happening, and the CIA, and we lose that. You know, it's like losing the Supreme Court and right down the, and our whole system goes under.
Are you hearing that from your former colleagues? Are you,
they're completely demoralized. And Panetta, the former CIA director, said they can't keep people. And the FBI agents have been in op-ed pieces saying, you know, I'm not going to stick around. Because the only reason people cooperate with the FBI is out of a sense of nationalism and a belief in their fairness. And to do the right thing. And if you got the president of the United States saying that the FBI is the deep state and is operating against our democracy, you know, people are going to say, I'm not going to work with the FBI. And the fact that their sources are being outed, the FBI, it's you know, it's dangerous. And a lot of the FBI agents, the smart ones, law degrees, saying, you know, nothing I can do. I can't do my job. So they go out and make money.
Yeah. No, that's interesting because they can, because once you leave, it's like government. Once you leave government in those high end positions, mm-hmm. there's all the private sector.
It's a nice landing spot for
really
you.
Really does appreciate you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So do you get the sense that as you're watching the FBI work here, do you get a sense that they're getting closer now? The New York Times is now reporting that Trump was speaking with witnesses about matters they discussed with the special counsel. So people would go sit down with Mueller, and then he would call them in and talk to them about it, even though the White House counsel told him not to do it. It's unclear whether he was tampering in any way. It doesn't it's a stretch to say that he interfered.
Admitted and tampered. He went to Comey and said, you know, lay off Flynn. You don't do that to law enforcement. The White House, that's not what they do. The Department of Justice does not work for the president. He may appoint the attorney general. It doesn't work for him. And they're not supposed to interfere in criminal investigations like Nixon did. So, yeah, there's been obstruction of justice, just how bad it is. But I'll tell you one thing. If Mueller decided to come after me, I would march down to his office and surrender right away. I mean, this guy is serious as a heart attack.
Yeah.
The president still hasn't sat down for that interview. Do you imagine that would be something we would expect to see and see very soon?
I don't think it's going to matter because I'm not sure that Trump really knows what's going on. I mean, he's that, you know, when you say the Oval Office is chaotic, it is. I mean, I don't think he can remember what he says from moment to moment. That's part of his personality. I don't think he just says whatever he feels like saying, and that's the truth at the moment. He may be something beyond a compulsive liar. He doesn't have a good grip on what's going on.
God, I wish you were right about that. I'm right.
And like I'm like throwing spaghetti against the wall.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's somewhere. You're not off completely. I think he's not that focused, but I think he also knows how to. He knows how to get it. When he does things, he knows they're wrong. And he knows he's got a way to get around them, and he's going to try to get around them. And I think that listen, this thing to me, the most devastating thing that has happened to him in terms of this investigation is this drunken tirade by Sam Nunberg, who, even though he would not have firsthand knowledge, he would have secondhand knowledge of this, that the president did know about the Russian meeting in June of 2016 because he was teasing that he was going to have, coming up in a few days, a big speech about all the things that Hillary Clinton did that were wrong. And that when he teased that, he knew that his son and son-in-law and Bannon were going to be meeting with the Russians 2 days after that, after he made that tease. And then that big speech never happened because the Russians didn't give him anything, because the Russians wanted their money back and didn't get an assurance that they would get their money back in that meeting.
Yeah, no, I think absolutely. Well, I mean, the fact that Roger Stone, who was sort of his political mentor in so many ways, you know, is out talking about Podesta is going to get his turn of leaked email. I mean, that's way too coincidental to be a coincidence. Yes. You know what I mean?
I know. There are no coincidences. That was your job, Bob. There are no coincidences. All right. How does this end? I mean, if this comes down and they come after him, my sense is that he will, because it seems to me, tell me if I'm wrong, Bob Bear, that Mueller is tightening the noose here. If he's doing that, is he going to fire him? Is he going to try to fire him? Is he going to move on him? I mean, you know, what happens here? And then where are we?
Once you get into the Russian money and the Russian money invested into the Trumps and the rest of it, and all these lunatics, this pickup team that he hired, obviously this guy Nunberg that was on TV drunk, you're going to dig up something. And if you're in a corner like that, like any cornered rat, you're gonna have to fire the guy.
Yeah.
Remember, Trump didn't expect to be president. He never thought he was gonna win. This was a branding thing. He was gonna, you know, give it a run, and this was gonna brand his empire, and he was gonna get out and get TV. I know this for a fact. He told his assistant that she said, "Are you crazy?" And he said, "No, this is going to be good for branding." And she shrugged her shoulders. Well, we'll see. And then all of a sudden, he's president. So when he has this pickup team and he's in the Super Bowl, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Can you win this?
Yeah. And he's got, and let's just, and just to make Anna feel better.
Yeah.
Robert Mueller is Tom Brady in this situation.
Wow.
Although they did lose. So I don't know. But I don't think Mueller is going to lose this one. I think they're, it's pretty tight.
But I think Trump's got to throw a Hail Mary.
before it's all said and done, I just want to ask you this question before we let you go. This, the woman in Thailand who is the Russian sex instructor who is in jail in Thailand.
Such a crazy, bizarre story. It seems like a movie.
I didn't even know there were such things. That's how old I am.
Yeah, sex instructor. Who knew you needed a lesson? I've been told I do. So anyway, the point here is that she's apparently got some sort of connection to this Deripaska guy who is an oligarch in Russia. And she says she's got the goods. She's got video. She's got pictures. She's got the goods that ties Deripaska to Trump, and we are to assume that that ties up some of this dossier that is in question here. Do we have any reason to believe her?
The Steele stuff, well, we've got a picture with Deripaska. And what you have to understand, the reason that Steele got caught wind of this is because Putin was running in this operation with the oligarchs. And the oligarchs are not intelligence officers, so they talk. And they go down to the local pub and they say, God, you know, I saw a picture of Trump, whatever, or this, or Trump that. And so they all gossiped. So they not only gossiped with each other, they gossiped with their girlfriends. And this is why we're seeing so many strands of it everywhere. Now, whether the gossip is grounded in fact, I can't tell you. But that's why we're hearing so much. So there is a possibility she knows something, as bizarre as that may seem.
And it does sound bizarre.
And by the way, they found Amelia Earhart today. So there's that, too. It's just in. All right, Bob, thanks very much.
You, Bob.
Appreciate it. Bob Baer.
Thanks, you guys.
Thanks. Bye. Right now, Judy's going to tell us what's coming up in a few minutes at the bottom of the hour.
Well, you're going to love this. A possible security breach in the Trump administration. We'll have that coming up at 6:30.
What? What? Violetta? Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantes,
yes.
Right here, 720 WGN. All right, our old favorite Ted Cruz is back in the news.
He's always stepping in something, right?
Yeah.
And maybe it makes sense to people in Texas, because I think sometimes we hear these stories and they don't make a lot of sense.
He is the first senator of Latin American heritage in Texas.
Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised by that.
He's implying that his opponent may be adopting a Spanish nickname to win votes. It's a 60-second radio ad. The Republican campaign attacks Representative Robert O'Rourke for going by the surname or nickname Beto. He was given as a child and has used throughout his political career. Here's the ad.
If you're gonna run in Texas, you can't be a liberal man. Cause liberal thought is not the spirit of a Lone Star man. You gotta be tough as Texas and honest about your plans. If you're gonna run in Texas, you can't be a liberal man.
What?
Can't be liberal man.
Where's the point of this?
I remember reading stories. Liberal Robert wanted to fit in, so he changed his name to Beto. And hit it with a grin. Beto wants those open borders. He wants to take our guns. Not a chance on earth he'll get a vote from millions of Texans.
All right.
Something about campaign season that just brings out the goofy everywhere, actually. But they say he changed his name to Beto to sound more, what, Texan?
To sound more, well, Hispanic.
Hispanic.
Right? Mm-hmm. That's why he changed his name to Beto.
Appeal to voters.
Now, what's interesting about this story, one might learn,
very interesting,
is that Ted Cruz himself changed his name to be less Hispanic. His actual given first name. Did we know this?
I did not. After a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, correct?
Listen, yes, exactly.
Listen to this, his interview with Chris Cuomo.
And, you know, look, your name is Raphael. You know, you go by Ted. Your middle name is Edward. That's an anglicized version of it. He went the other way and has a more ethnic version of his name. Why go after it? You're both doing the same thing.
Well, listen, you're absolutely right. My name is Raphael Edward Cruz. I am the son of my father, Raphael Cruz, an immigrant from Cuba who came to Texas with nothing and had $100 in his underwear.
Through Canada.
Couldn't speak English, washed dishes, making 50
Where
cents an
born.
Hour.
Where you were born.
And my dad's journey of an immigrant coming to Texas seeking freedom, that's the American story. That's who we are.
He's left out the part that he was born in Canada.
Yes.
I don't like it when they call me Raphael, though, because it reminds me of when I was a child. And my mama would spank me when I... And she'd call me Raphael while she'd hit me.
But I bet that's why you like queso so much.
She'd spank you when she'd catch your hand in the queso jar. Seen it 100 times.
Oh, it'd be all slimy. I'd put my hand right in there and it'd come out. I'd be dripping and hot all over my hand.
Classic hand in the queso jar. Mom walks in. Next thing you know, you got a spanking.
Raphael, what are you doing? What are you doing, Raphael? Don't get your hand out of there! Get your hand out of there! Oh, it just reminds me of such terrible memories. My hand all gooey, and my mother yelling at me.
Still a great name. Raphael's an awesome name. I don't know where you get Ted from that.
Well, Edward is his middle name, so he calls himself Ted. Now, wait, hold on. Wait, there's more.
You know, in terms of the jingle, some of it is just have a sense of humor. I mean, you actually miss the title of the song, which is, if you're going to run in Texas, you can't run as a liberal man. And the whole point of the song
is... That's a catchy title, by the way, Senator.
You know, we had some fun with it.
That's fun? Uh-huh. That's
Ted Cruz having fun.
That's funny?
Ted Cruz doesn't have any self-awareness. He thinks he's like the funny guy, the bully who can joke around with others, but he's the easiest target of them all.
Right, remember his Simpsons analogy?
Right. Like, ha-ha, good one, Ted. Good
We're
one,
the party
Raphael.
Of Homer Simpson, where and the like, Democrats are the Lisa Simpsons.
Where you can just flip it right back at him and be like, look at you, man. You're easy. And he's like the guy who tries to pick on all these other politicians right. and newcomers.
Well, I see, this comes down to that sense of humor thing, which is that there are some people that don't really have a very good sense of humor who think that song about being a liberal man is funny. See, for it to be funny, it would have to be ironic. It's kind of funny going the other way. It's the song is kind of bad and it's kind of over the top, like simple. So one would imagine that if I were Beto or whatever this dude's name is, Beto O'Rourke, mm-hmm. I know a lot of Irish guys named Beto, that he's
very common.
Very common.
Go to Beverly.
Yeah,
you'll
like Mike.
Him.
Mike and Beto.
Just
Mike,
yell Beto.
Mike, where's your brother Beto? Anyway, but see, Ted Cruz kind of misses it. And then he even misses the point of real irony, right? Like The Simpsons.
You know, I will say, a lot of Democrats saying how happy they were not to be the party of Homer Simpson. I think Homer Simpson is an everyman. He works hard. He provides for his family. Sure, is he flawed? Is he imperfect? Of course.
Yeah.
You look at Bart. You saw a lot of people on the left blasting Bart. All right, fine. So he's a teenage delinquent. He loves to be free. He doesn't want a whole bunch of sanctimonious Seymour Skinners running his life. I think that's a libertarian sentiment.
Oh, my God.
What did he say?
He doesn't understand the point of The Simpsons, and he doesn't understand the point of irony. The point of irony is you don't do a song about your opponent that is like the song that they did. If you want to do it, I'll play a song for you in a second that is ironic and funny and interesting that was produced by our own Brian Altimer. I'll play that for you in just a second mm-hmm. so you get to see what irony and humor is all about, Senator.
It's like the song's like, ha-ha, you're a Democrat.
Just don't call me Raphael because it reminds me of my mother and my sticky hands when I had them down there in the jar. And then she caught me. And then she spanked me and said, Raphael, no, no. You'll go blind, Raphael, no.
Ted Cruz got more votes in last night's Texas primary than all of the Democratic challengers combined. So it looks like he's going to be around for the program for a little while.
Well, I mean, but that's the Democrats, right? That's all the Democrats combined, right?
Who emerged from that got far fewer votes. So it's a long time, but it just obviously state.
Yes, it's a red state. I don't think he's going to lose the Senate seat. I think
it's weird that he's even
perfect for that. And I think with this jingle that he's got going
he's
here,
done, that's it. He's
it's really
it out.
Funny.
I don't think he could possibly lose now.
Just getting a little crazy, making up jingles.
Yes, we're going to make up a jingle.
If you're talking about the jingle, just have a little fun with it.
At least
the whole point is you can't be a liberal man.
At least he got that whole staffing situation figured out with his, what was his aide who was on the Pornhub, remember? You got caught in that thing?
You like one video and then...
liking a video on Twitter.
So don't remind me of that, the time that my mother caught me looking at the movie on the cassette, and I was had my hand in the queso.
The screen froze.
Just trying to kick your feet up, eat some queso, and watch a film, and your mom's got to walk in and ruin
everything.
And
then she's walking in, she's ruining the whole thing, and then she was so mad. She said it was disgusting, Raphael, disgusting!
Their hand in the queso or the video?
All right. You want comedy? I'll give you comedy. Here you go. Here's some comedy.
This is an intense place, as every White House. It's not abnormal that you would have people come and go.
But actually, it is actually abnormal. No administration in recent history has had this much turnover.
But it's not abnormal to have turnover.
Trump's in the White House. All the staffers have come back. No Sally Yates, she's gone. He made her pack her bags. Mike Flynn might go to jail. He better not drop the soap. Angie Reed was shown the door, but why nobody knows. James Comey's Russian case, the White House can't have that. He wasn't loyal, so Trump stabbed him in the back. Mike the B didn't last, walked the shop, kicked out the door. Sean Spicer did his best, but the president wanted more. Now Omarosa's gone, now why they go do that? Know what you're thinking, and it's not because she's black. Steve Bannon lost his mind and Gorka walked away. Price and Dina Powell had nothing left to say. It's only been a year, he's sending staffers back. Mike Short, Rince, Priebus, Scaramucci, y'all come back. Rob Porter had to go, Raphael has disappeared. Hope Hicks and Gary Cohn, who else the end is near?
And I read, well, gee, maybe people don't want to work for Trump. And believe me, everybody wants to work in the White House. So many people want to come in. I have a choice of anybody. I could take any position in the White House. And they love this White House because we have energy like rarely before.
Violetta's got the WGN traffic trouble spots.